Welcome to another episode of One on One with Joe O'Donnell. Thanks for tuning in as always. Sorry for the long layoff. You probably heard that before. But the start of the 23-24 season, not only underway, but now at the quarterway point, basically. And the Minnesota Wild, after winning opening night, didn't win a whole lot over the next 15 or so games. That ultimately cost Dean Evason and one of his assistant coaches, Bob Woods, their jobs, unfortunately. John Hines, the new head coach, Patrick Dwyer brought up from the Iowa Wild to fill in that assistant coaching role vacated by the dismissal of Bob Woods. And what do you know? Now we've got a four-game winning streak for the Minnesota Wild. So a lot to dive into with my guest today, Kevin Gork from Bally Sports North. Back-to-back episodes for you with Bally Sports North talent. Last time out, we had Wes Walls, former NHLer and color analyst, as well as a pre- and post-game host for the Minnesota Wild today, Kevin Gork, sideline reporter, ringside reporter, if you will, for the Minnesota Wild on Bally Sports North, will join me in just a moment. He's got a slew of other things on his plate. We'll dive into all of that with him and talk about this resurgence for the Minnesota Wild. Of course, in the mix during this early portion of the season was the Wild's trip to Stockholm, Sweden for the 2023 NHL Global Series. What an experience it was. The Wild did not win either game. They suffered an overtime loss and a shootout loss, shootout loss on the first game to Ottawa, the next day falling in overtime to Toronto. But what a great experience. I think organizationally across the board, everybody had an outstanding time. Stockholm was a beautiful city, a ton of history and character and tradition in Stockholm. Obviously, Swedish hockey players have had such an impact on the NHL over the last, three decades or whatever it's been, of having European players really impact the game at such a high level on a team-by-team nightly basis. I mean, just look at the Minnesota Wild with Joel Eriksson Ek and Jonas Brodin, Philip Gustafsson, Marcus Johansson, the young goaltender Jesper Wallstedt in the system of Swedish descent. So Stockholm, a great time. What an event put on by the NHL. Everything was first class. The people were so friendly. Had a great time exploring Old Town Stockholm, walking around, checking out the local pubs, doing some shopping, and just experiencing all that Stockholm had to offer. It was a little dark, a little cold at times. In the winter, Stockholm can be a little dark because the sun will go will set at like 3:30 p.m. most days. So you had to get up and at it. And in the summer, they've got all kinds of daylight, beautiful weather. So if you're planning a trip to Sweden, or are going to take the old ferry from Sweden to Finland over from Stockholm to Helsinki, I think it's like 2 hours on the boat, so you can knock out both at once. I'd probably recommend the summer, but what an experience it was. The Global Series was awesome. Really, really loved Stockholm and getting to see what that great city is all about. But again, the Wild now 4-0-0 under John Hines. They'll continue their four-game road trip in Vancouver and then Edmonton and Seattle before coming back home. And before you know it, it'll be Christmas and New Year's, and we'll see where the Wild sit in the potential playoff standings as this season moves along. But it certainly looked like a different team under John Hines. Now we'll talk about that and a whole lot more with Kevin Gork here in just a second. Don't forget, One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell is presented by SodaStick. Go to SodaStick.com to get your original Minnesota-inspired goods. Use code One-on-One for 15% off. That's One-on-One for 15% off your next order. Holiday season right around the corner. No better spot to hook up the Wild fan or the Minnesota sports fan in your life than to get them some SodaStick goods. Super comfy. All their apparel is designed and screen printed right in Minnesota. That's SodaStick.com. Designed by Minnesotans for Minnesotans. Again, a great way to do some holiday shopping at SodaStick. SodaStick.com. Use code One-on-One for 15% off. All right, as promised, my guest today is Kevin Gork from Bally Sports North, a Burnsville, Minnesota native, lives in Minnetonka now. Kevin, always a pleasure, my friend. You can follow him on Twitter at Gorgomatic21. That's at Gorgomatic21. Kevin Gork, how are you?
I'm good, Joe. Just like you, enjoying the uptick in the season for the Wild. It was for a while they're kind of a death march. It's great to see the guys smiling again, playing good hockey. And you know, as broadcasters go, we kind of live vicariously through them. And it's been good lately.
Well, look, I'm going to be very honest with our thousands and upon thousands of listeners here on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. Kevin Gorg is literally like two hotel rooms down from me here in Vancouver, but we are doing this virtually on Zoom with no video. So we can't see each other. And I kind of like it, but I miss your presence, you know, but
we're not too far away.
Yeah, so we're not. And my setup, I brought one microphone, so it was going to be difficult. So I figured this would be the best way to do it. Glad to hear Vancouver's treating you well. We got out for a little walk this morning.
Yeah, it's a great walking city. I love this spot. It's always a little warmer than it is back home. And, you know, we're in the water here. And it's just a really cool place to visit every year. And so I got out this morning, got a little running around going. And it's great. We have the day off. So we've got the open slate in front of us.
All right, we're going to dive into Kevin's playing career. He's a former goaltender. We'll talk about his broadcasting career as the ringside guy for Bally Sports North, covering the Wild now for, almost 20 years. We'll talk about some things off the ice with him, his role at Canterbury Park. A lot to dive into with the man that I like to call 21. All right, Gorg, look, I'm having trouble wrapping my head around why this Wild team is different. And yes, the players, yes, the coaches, you ask other broadcasters, media members, and I think some people are still scratching their heads much like me. What have you seen? What's been the biggest difference for this hockey team under John Hines and this now 4-game winning streak?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors, but the biggest factor to me is watching these guys during that 7-game losing streak, especially at the end of that streak in Detroit on that fateful Sunday. They loved Dean. They enjoyed playing for him. They knew he was a good coach. They didn't want to see him go, but they certainly felt the pressure, and they played tight. They were gripping the sticks. As much as they wanted to do it, they just couldn't do it, and Bill Guerin sensed that and made the move. I know it's hard for him to make that move. So all of a sudden now it's a big wake-up call. It's a big letdown that you let your coach get fired. But then it's also a reset. And in pro sports, when these guys get punched in the face, most of them are high-level competitors. They wanted to, you know, show that they're not as bad as they've been. And they come back and they play a really good game against St. Louis. John Hines comes in, and I think he's just tweaked some things. He knew that this team wasn't that far away. If you watch some of those losses within that seven, they were doing some things well. And then I think if you watch the way the season's unfolded, Spurgeon missed the first 13. He was just getting back into the flow. He's back to the top of his game. Gustafson, when we got to Sweden, seemed to turn his season around. He was building his game back, which is so important. And then the two most important players up front, Kirill Kaprizov and Matt Boldy, had both gone through a tough stretch. Boldy had been injured. Kirill coming off that serious injury last year. They both were starting to show signs and now have figured it out. You put it all together, you get a couple of wins, the team starts feeling good. The tweaks that John Hines has put in are working. He doesn't overthink it. And all of a sudden, this team looks like the team last year that put up 103 points. Now, can they sustain it? I don't know. It's been 4 games, but boy, they've looked awfully good during these 4 games. So I do believe that right now, because they're healthy, because their goaltending has turned around, that this might be sustainable, at least to get them back in the playoff conversation, which, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, I would have said you were nuts.
I just checked the Athletic before I jumped on with you, has their projections, you know, their computer projections. Dom, I can't pronounce his last name, Alphabet Soup last name. He's awesome. He does a lot of this analytical stuff for the NHL, for the Athletic. And they right now have the Wild projected at 92 points and a 47% chance to make the playoffs. Basically a coin flip, where I bet if he had done that even 10 days ago, it was probably in the teens as far as percentage chances. But anyway, we'll see where it goes, of course. Your initial impressions of John Hines, what have you seen from the new Wild head coach?
I'm impressed with the way he's been able to come in and not try to do too much. I think a lot of times when coaches come in middle of the season, they try to come in and overhaul everything. His patience to me has stood out here in the first week and change, where he's been able to not even really make too many changes within the line combinations, but just like I mentioned earlier, subtle tweaks in the way they push the puck out of the zone, use their speed on the blue line and those back end guys to get the initiative going, and short, quick passes, everybody back for the regroup in quick fashion. His practices have been really organized and detailed. I've enjoyed watching that. And knowing that the Dean and the coaching staff had this team I think, in a position for success. They just couldn't do it on the ice. So he hasn't really overhauled everything. And then just the everyday, the way he handles himself, Joe, just kind of just a down to earth, no nonsense, yes, but very easygoing and comfortable in his role as the head coach. Doesn't seem to put too much pressure on himself or the people around him. And so, yeah, I like what I'm seeing so far. I don't know him very well, but you know, I've been doing this, as you mentioned, for almost two decades. So I've seen every single coaching change that the team has made. This one has seemed awfully seamless so far.
I know you were personally very disappointed that Dean Evason and Bob Woods lost their jobs, like most of the staff were. They were great guys to be around and to work with. And I know that myself, yourself, and again, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think all of us had a great deal of respect for those two individuals. But why were you, you know, we talked in the days leading up as the rumors were swirling and you didn't like the way things were trending because you liked those guys so much. What personally about Dean Evason and Bob Woods kind of attracted you towards their personalities?
Just quality human beings, guys that cared about you, talked to you, treated you as, you know, one of their close confidants. And I think in this business, having done it for as long as I have, that's not easy. There's a trust level that has to be built up both ways. And just, I really enjoyed getting to know who they were away from hockey, just both tremendous people. And then I just think they're both good coaches. Like, you know, I mean, the passion they have for hockey, how much they care about the players and love the game. I respect that because that's what it's all about to me. And so, yeah, it sucked to see it happen. But I think if you take a look back now and realize what they have on their resumes, they're going to land on their feet. I don't think Dean Evason will last the entire season before he's a head coach somewhere else in this league, and he'll do a great job. And I think Bob Woods likely will be right there with him. So it wasn't fun. We could all feel it. It was pressure filled that last week. Everybody wanted so much for this team to figure it out with Dean and Bob still here, and it didn't happen. And you know, I go back to Bill Guerin, Joey. I look at the way this guy plays off of the feel because he's been there. Like this guy has, you know, when people try to question him, like we're out and about and I got buddies that played the game and coached the game and they try to come at me with, you know, criticism. I'm like, listen, this guy's done it as a manager. He's done it as a player. He knows what it looks, feels, and smells like for a team to be a playoff contender and a cup contender. And he knows when to make subtle moves or when he knows when to make a big move. And it wasn't an easy move for him because he and Dean are good friends. But once again, he picked the right time. Like you can't argue it right now with what we're seeing.
Yeah, well said. And I would encourage the listeners, if you're subscribed to The Athletic and you missed the piece Michael Russo wrote just after Dean Evason was dismissed, sort of how that all played out and the interaction between Evason and Guerin when the chopping block came, so to speak. Just a really good article, tells you all you need to know about both of them as human beings, as people, as colleagues. So really good stuff there. And I think I would just add one thing, Kevin, like you talk about Bob Woods and Dean Evason and their dedication to the game. Like both those guys spent time in the minors. And I feel like when you grind it out in the minors, you have to have a great passion for the game. Both those guys certainly did that before they ever got to the National Hockey League. All right, I'm going to put the screws to you on this one. And I want an answer. All right. More impressive through 20 plus games, Marco Rossi or Brock Faber?
I'm going to go with Marco Rossi. And the reason I'm going to say this is the little bit that I got to see Brock Faber last year, none of this surprises me. The 19 games I saw last year with Marco Rossi where he posted 1 point, this does surprise me. I will not sit here and tell you that I saw this coming because I did not. I didn't think he was maybe going to make it through the summer. I thought Bill Guerin might move him in the summer. Once again, credit to Bill Guerin for having that conversation with Marco Rossi in their exit meeting, challenging the young man. And big time credit to Marco Rossi for staying in Minnesota with his teammates, putting the extra work in, putting on the 10 to 15 pounds of muscle, changing the way he plays the game, and building that confidence from a great training camp, solid preseason games, and a great start to the season. That is awesome on Marco Rossi. He's a completely different player than the player we saw last year. And I got to be honest, I did not see this coming. I don't think a lot of us did. And so probably the more impressive is Marco Rossi, who, as we had that big game last weekend with the Connor Bedard in town, and he has been ballyhooed, and he has been awesome as a rookie. It's hard to believe that Marco Rossi is just a couple of goals behind him right now for rookie scoring. And you package together what Faber and Rossi are doing, what Wallstedt's doing down with the Iowa Wild, where this team's going to be in a year and a half when that $15 million comes off the books and Bill Guerin gets to go out there and make some real big-time changes to this roster. If you're a Wild fan, I get it. Some of these struggles this year have been tough and painful, but you look at the big picture. I've been doing this now. This is year 18. I have never been more excited for the future of Wild hockey than I am right now.
Wow. Well, I tend to agree with a lot of that. The future does look bright, and boy, it just hit me the last couple of games watching Rossi between Zuccarello and Kaprizov. Like, I know a lot of Wild fans clamored for that last year when he was in the press box or on the fourth line, but he hadn't earned it. Now he got the opportunity, various circumstances presenting it to him, but he has run with it, and he looks natural between those two players, those two stars in Kaprizov and Zuccarello, don't you think?
Everybody thinks it's easy to play with those guys, and I would disagree. You have to see the game differently. You have to be creative. You have to be able to trust that you can give the puck up, go to open space, and you're going to get the puck back. He fits perfectly there. Last year, he did not earn it. He did not play at the level where he deserved to be a first-line center last year. He earned it this year, and he earned it day one in training camp and came in ready to go. So credit to him. And I think a lot of us, when handicapping Marco Rossi, the player last year, and I'll put myself at the top of this list, failed to look at the human side of everything. The struggles he had with his health, with the COVID situation, his heart, missing a year of hockey, that cannot be understated. And, you have to realize that it's a process for young players. And again, I think a lot of people around this organization that cover this team thought Bill Guerin's going to make a move. Bill Guerin's going to take that first round pick, not going to allow him to be a bust in Minnesota and make an aggressive trade because Bill Guerin is that guy. He makes those aggressive moves. Well, Bill Guerin knew more than the rest of us because he had the conversation. He trusted the player. The player put the work in, and now they're both looking awfully good right now as the season unfolds.
As a former goaltender, how much have you enjoyed watching and covering Marc-Andre Fleury?
I'm a rube when it gets right down to it. Anybody that knows me knows I'm a sports-loving rube. Marc-Andre Fleury has been a player that I've looked up to and enjoyed watching his entire career. I'm a Penguins fan. People also know that if they know me. The Wild are my very favorite team of all the teams in my sports world, but the Penguins are my second favorite hockey team. A lot of that has to do with Sidney Crosby, but a lot of it has to do with Marc-Andre Fleury. The fact that the Wild got him, I'll never forget that move a couple years ago on trade deadline. It caught all of us off guard, and I was giddy. And then you just don't know what you're going to get, right? The guy's at the end of his career. Is he going to, have any type of connection with the Wild, media, fans, people around the team, whatever. But it's a dream come true. The way this guy has come in, been a part of, the fabric of Minnesota Wild hockey. We've had a chance as broadcasters to really get to know the Flower. And he's just a lovable, tremendous human. Who's one of the greatest goalies in the history of the game. And I think someday we're going to look back and say, we were there for all these monumental experiences, and we're coming up on 1,000 games. He's climbing the charts in terms of wins. He's going to go down as one of the best two or three goalies to ever play the game. And he's going to finish his career likely in St. Paul with the Minnesota Wild. So I'm telling myself this right now. I'm telling you at some point, we got to get pictures taken. We got to get sticks signed. We got to get something to prove that we were here at this moment, because, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, we're going to, I think, really appreciate the time we had with Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm enjoying it as it's unfolding. But when you started to talk about some of the milestones that we know are just days, maybe weeks away, I did get a little bit of goosebumps. Those are moments that will, rewrite the NHL record books in some fashion. Marks that might never be reached again by some goaltenders. And it is pretty cool to see. Plus, on top of that, like you said, he's just such an unbelievable person, a human being. He's been a lot of fun to be around. So I concur with all of that, my friend. All right. The best interview on the Wild roster this season is who?
I think it's still the incumbent number one before the season started. That's, the Moose, Marcus Foligno. He's tremendous. And you know, the camera loves him. Obviously, he's got the good looks. He's got the great personality. He's a leader. He will tell it the way it is. He's not afraid to say that he and his teammates aren't doing things the right way, if that's the case. He's just terrific to hear from. His insight is awesome. And just the personality that he brings to this team comes out in those interviews. So he still is number one in my book.
When did you decide you wanted to pursue a career in broadcasting?
Well, anybody that grew up
with me. What are you laughing for?
Well, because people made fun of me as a kid because I was the guy, you know, as a little rug rat playing street hockey that would broadcast the street hockey games while I was playing them. I was the guy that, you know, when we played baseball in the backyard, I'd have the stat books that I'd build for all of us and I'd broadcast those. So it was always, Joe, it was always there in the back of my mind, even though when I got done playing hockey at St. Thomas, I went into teaching and coaching. I did a minor in sports broadcasting, and I just always knew that I wanted to have that in my holster for potential jobs. And then, you know, I think the way things played out, getting my start in broadcasting back in the 90s when I was still a high school hockey coach in Minnesota and made a connection with Anthony LaPanta and did high school hockey games in the section playoffs and then in the state tournament. That led to a job at Canterbury in the early 2000s, which eventually would lead me to that connection with LaPanta, where I circled back in 2006 and latched on with the Wild at the end of my college coaching career with the women at St. Thomas. So it was meant to be. I do believe this is where I was supposed to be in my career, and I've been very blessed to have the opportunities that have kind of come my way.
What was the first NHL game you worked?
First game I ever worked was on the road in Anaheim, Jacques Lemaire's Wild taking on the Ducks, a young Josh Harding in the net. I'm an old left-handed goalie myself, so I had a connection with Josh, and he was very unproven at that point. And I'll never forget it because I had a conversation with Josh after morning skate. He was getting the chance to start the game that night. That's back when the Ducks were really, really good. And, you know, he just mentioned that he had made a couple of subtle moves within how he was attacking the puck. He was a very athletic goalie. And he said his game was trending in the right direction. So I did something in game. I mentioned that. He went out there and validated that conversation and that in-game hit, because he ended up with 30-plus saves and a 2-0 Wild win. And I was off and rolling, and it was such a rush, right, to have that conversation, to hear what he was saying, to be an ex-goalie and to kind of understand how he was kind of working his way through some different things in the blue paint, and then see the young kid go out there and have a game like that. It was a huge rush, and it just set me up, I think, to understand, you know, the role I have, the blessings that were given me to have that opportunity to be around these guys. And then to get to watch them ice level and play at that level, it was a magical night.
So was that like this? Was that the season opener? Was that just a mid-season game? Like, when were you?
It was a mid-season game, because I remember in 06 when I first started, I was still coaching at St. Thomas, so it's more of a part-time thing.
Okay, cool.
And so I would do some work in the studio. I would do some work on the, you know, on the sidelines with the interviews. It didn't become this job full-time where I'm the traveling guy all the games until the following year when I left St. Thomas and decided to hook on with, at that time, Fox Sports North as the reporter for the Wild.
How do you prepare for a game?
I think the biggest thing for me is to be at the rink and have conversations with players and coaches. That, to me, is the lifeblood of the reporter's job. You know, most guys in the booth, the play-by-play and the color person can get to the stats and to get to the trends and some of the different numbers that come out in the broadcast. They can analyze the game as it unfolds. What I'm trying to do in my role is to have the stuff that you can't find on a stat sheet, that conversation with a coach or player, that tweak in what they're doing, you know, from that practice to that next game, that matchup that they have with that particular player. To me, that's kind of the role that I have. And then I have to feed off the broadcast. So if Wes Walls, who's on this trip, makes a comment in the first period about the way the Wild are forechecking, and I get the chance to interview one of the forwards in that first intermission, I'm going to try to extract from that player something that Wes brought up in the first period to tie that whole thing together and to get it right from the player's mouth. And then obviously you react as the game unfolds, and then you do all that stuff in the post game, and then you try to bring it to the next game. And so it's always in flux. It's always in motion, but the lifeblood of the job really is being around the team every day and having those conversations with the players and coaches.
Well, and you got to have your multicolored Sharpies too.
Well, when you're age 56 and you're not good on a tablet, and a lot of people that do my job do it the way that you should in 2023, I don't. I have placards and I write everything down. So I have quotes from players, conversations, you know, nuggets that I need to bring out in the broadcast. And like you, when you make your notes for your call of the game, 70% of the stuff we write down, we never use, but it's there in case we need it. And the cool thing is, if I didn't use it all last night in the game in Calgary, maybe it'll come up in the next game in Vancouver. And it's the constant, you know, trying to have different ways to bring the fans closer to the team. We're all trying to take the fans along on this ride. We're lucky enough to be out there on the bus, at the rink, on the airplane with the guys, feeling the vibe of the season. And then whether it's your radio call or our TV broadcast, we're trying to take the fans with us and maybe sometimes take them behind the curtain a little bit so they get a feel for what's going on. And it's honestly, you know, looking back, it just, I never take it for granted. Every year I get excited for it. Every time the season starts, it's so much fun. And then for me, like, game nights are the absolute best. There's an energy about it that I don't get anywhere else in my life. And I'm so glad that I have this, and I've had it for a long time and hope I have it for another 18 years because it's been awesome.
Is there anything more challenging for you than interviewing a player after a tough loss or during, say, a 7-game winless skid like the Wild were mired in earlier? Is there anything harder than that?
It's the worst part of the job. I look back at that game in Detroit a week ago Sunday, so 10 days ago, and Ryan Hartman was damn near in tears. He really couldn't put a sentence together, ended up using the F word, and we tape a lot of those interviews and air them a couple of minutes later just in case, and we had to beep that out, and I felt bad. I had to ask the question, and John Stroh, who's been the producer for Wild Hockey on TV from day one, told me as I was walking to the locker room, listen, after this loss, we don't need a fourth line guy. We need one of the go-to guys. I'm like, okay. And Hartman came out and did it, and it was awful. It was painful, but we had to do it. And then, you know, we were there gathered around Dean and could feel the pain, like could feel the absolute heartbreak in his voice recapping that game. And it's no fun at all. As I mentioned on the front end of our conversation, we do live vicariously through the ups and downs of these players and coaches, and we want the absolute best for them. That was a day, and that was a week and week and change or 2 weeks of hockey that I hated, but you got to take the good with the bad.
How did you react to Carissa Thompson saying that at times during NFL games, she's made up reports, quotes from coaches, she's made up paraphrase stuff, and use that because, say, the coach bailed on her at halftime or she didn't have time to get the interview done before her hit, as you guys call it. How did you react to that, those comments and sort of like throwing all sideline ringside reporters, I don't want to say under the bus, but just giving a sort of a black cloud over your part of the industry?
Yeah, it was hurtful and it was irresponsible. And if she did it, it certainly is completely the opposite of what we were taught and how we were you know, so supposed to go about our jobs. It was really a tough deal, and it's one person. It, you know, for the black cloud of it, I don't think it's more than a very small percentage that would ever do something like that. And I do get teased a lot about the placards, but they're there for a reason. I don't want to misquote these guys. I don't want to put words in their mouth. I want to have the conversation come out that I had with that particular player or that particular coach. And so I was very disappointed, but I also understand that, listen, you know, these players and their families and their friends, they watch these broadcasts. They listen to these games when you're calling them, and they know. And so, you know, I've been doing this, as I mentioned, for almost 2 decades, and they'll know if you're doing that, they'll figure it out and they'll no longer talk with you, and you have to build that trust up. And so, you know, I looked at that, I cringed. I get that you can do that. I just, that's not how I do my business. And I just think that people have to understand that, you know, 99% of the people that are in that role don't do that.
I'm going to switch gears with you here for a couple of minutes and take you back to the good old days. What was it like going to North Stars games at the old Met Center?
Well, you know, as a kid, that was my club. That was the team I fell in love with as a youngster. And so the Met Center was a really unique building. It was super bright. It was way ahead of the times. This is going back to the late 70s, early 80s, when I was a regular at that Met Center. And they had a place called the Observatory Club, which was an actual restaurant that overlooked one end of the rink. And so for my birthday every year, in February, the birthday present every year was my dad and I would go to a game and have dinner in the Observatory Club and watch the North Stars. And, you know, I was the guy that was shoveling driveways and do whatever I could do in the winter to scrape up enough money to do the $5 standing room only spots that you got there up near the top corner of the building. You know, they practiced at the Burnsville Ice Center. That was their practice facility. They didn't have a facility at the Met Center. And so, you know, we were friends with all the guys at the rink because we played youth hockey there. So we'd sneak in the Zamboni area and go watch North Stars practice, and they'd give us sticks and we'd get pucks. It was an amazing time to be a kid. And back then, you know, when the Montreal Canadiens came to town and you got to go to the game, it was bigger than life. You know, Guy Lafleur was on the ice, Jacques Lemaire, Ken Dryden, like these were my childhood idols. And so, yeah, the Met Center to me was just a playground, a paradise, so to speak, for a hockey-loving kid. And there was nothing quite like that building. It was way, way ahead of its time.
Did you have a favorite North Stars player growing up?
I did. Goaltender Gilles Meloche. He wore number 27 when the North Stars started making their runs in the early 80s. And one of their big moments in their franchise's history was beating the Montreal Canadiens, who were the defending Stanley Cup champions, in an epic seven-game series, winning Game 7 at the Old Forum in Montreal. Meloche was brilliant in that game, helped lead them to the 1981 Stanley Cup with his goaltending partner, Don Beaupre. Donnie's kid, Connor, of course, is the bug, the e-bug that we have at the Xcel Energy Center, so that's kind of a cool tie-in. But Meloche was my guy, and I got to tell you a quick story, if there's time here for the listeners, bear with me, but I was the kid in grade school that every project, every book report tied somehow in to the Minnesota North Stars. And there was a lady that was my very favorite teacher, my eighth grade teacher at St. John the Baptist in Savage, Minnesota. Her name was Maureen Trenary. And my mom worked in the office and kind of was the secretary in the main office. And her and Mrs. Trenary were good friends. And Mrs. Trenary always asked my mom about my obsession with the North Stars. So that during that school year, she had gone to a fundraiser for cancer. And one of the auction items was a Gilles Meloche signed North Star jersey. And Mrs. Trenary was one. She was a great lady, but you didn't mess with her if she didn't get what she was supposed to get. Well, they didn't give her the jersey that night. They said it'd be coming. Well, it never came. So she went to a North Star game and she raised holy hell with the security desk and said, listen, here's my receipt. I have this jersey coming. They have not given me my Meloche jersey. It was a charitable donation, but I want this jersey. They escorted her down to the locker room. She met with Gilles Meloche, had him sign the jersey just outside the locker room.
Come on.
And at the end of the school year, I'm not kidding you, she presented me with that jersey. And it was an unbelievable moment in time. I still have the jersey. And it's one of those things that stays with you. So my Meloche jersey still in my closet, signed back in what would have been probably around 1981. And props to Mo Trenary, who ended up being the principal at John Stroh's junior high and is friends with John Stroh, our TV producer I mentioned earlier, and his family. So it all tied back together to where I am now.
Very cool. Great story. Glad you shared it. By the way, the term Kevin used, e-bug, would be the emergency backup goalie. Every team has one. Connor Beaupre, as he said, is the Wild. So home games, Xcel Energy Center, you see Connor Beaupre up in the press box. He's just hanging out. His goalie bag is there somewhere in the building. God forbid he needs to go throw his gear on. I want you to finish this sentence for me, Kevin. The North Stars moved to Dallas and?
I cried. Yeah, as a grown, at that point, not a fully grown man, but an adult.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, it was one of the worst times of my young life. And again, at that point, I'm a young man, right? This is going back to 1993, so I would have been in my mid-20s. And Yeah, that and when they tore the Met Center down shortly thereafter were some real dark days for me personally and my sports loving nature. I couldn't believe it. Like, honestly, like knowing how much passion Minnesota has for the game of hockey and knowing what a fabric of our society the North Stars were, I literally could not believe it. And to not have hockey, well, for the next 7 years was heartbreaking. And I'll be honest, when the Wild came in 2000, all of us were a little apprehensive. Like we had been really hurt. And all that being said, we ended up getting partial season tickets, because that's what you do. And I remember there's four of us, so we each got to go to half the games, two and two, and started going to games. And then in 2003, when Darby and Bruno and Wes Walls and that team under Jacques Lemaire had that unbelievable run to the Western Conference Finals, upsetting Colorado and Vancouver along the way, that is when the switch flipped for all of us, where we said, okay, we're going to put the North Star thing to bed. We are now Wild fans. And that was 2003. And then, like I mentioned, just 3 years later, I was working with the club. So, it just kind of felt like fate. But yeah, those were dark days, Joe, in 1993.
So was the general perception around Minnesota, you know, the Twin Cities, the same, like, do you feel like you guys, your group of hardcore hockey heads, were in the minority with the whole let's be apprehensive, we've been burned before with the NHL leaving? Or like, was it a little bit of like, let's hold out and see how this goes from the general population, do you feel like, until maybe 03, when you go on a run and there's sort of that underdog story and that galvanizes the community? Okay, this is our team.
The hardcore fans were going to play the wait and see game. That's where I was. That's where a lot of my buddies were. The average fans were like, okay, this is cool. We got a brand new building. St. Paul was the place to be. You know, you got this legendary guy behind the bench and Jacques Lemaire. You got these hardworking guys who, even in those first couple of years, like they put it out there every night. Like they worked their butts off every single night. And so I think, you know, Minnesota is still a blue collar state when it gets right down to it. You know, there's a lot of people that really respect that type of hockey. And so it didn't take long, but I think it, for a lot of us hardcore guys, a lot of us folks of that certain age that had been really hurt by the fact that the NHL took our team away, it took a little time. And I think for everybody in 2003, that was the quote unquote turning point where everybody was all in on this new team. And it was no longer, well, you know, we're still North Star fans, but we'll take a look at the Wild. Well, we were Wild fans at that point. We had crossed over and they were the club. And, you know, I think as you watch this thing unfold now, and, you know, 23 years later, they've become what the North Stars were. Like, Minnesota is always going to be a hockey state, and it'll never change. Like, everybody grows up around the game. They've got family members, they've got friends that play. So I think that now this is a lot like it was with the North Stars were. Good or bad, that building's going to be full. People love hockey, and they love hockey at the highest level.
When did you first get on the ice, and then when did you first put the pads on?
Didn't take long. Like, I got on the ice as a six-year-old, and I think figured out at a young age, early in that first season as a mite, that the goalie never had to leave the ice. And I just like, this is cool. I want to stay out there. I don't want to shift in and shift out. I want to be out on the ice the whole time. And I'm like, I'll do it. And so I remember I played a couple of games out early, and then nobody else was, I guess, dumb enough to want to be the goalie. And so back then you practiced outside, you played half your games outside, half your games inside. And outside playing goalie is not a lot of fun because it's cold. You're standing there and the puck comes in and it's that much more frozen and it hurts that much more. But I got through those first couple of years and then just fell in love with it. And, you know, from my dad shooting tennis balls or Nerf balls at me in the basement to being the street hockey goalie to having time to sit back there and broadcast while I was playing practice or games. I just, like, this was where I wanted to be. And it was a good fit.
What makes Minnesota youth and high school hockey so special?
For me, it's the dream. For me, I think every youth player that gets a chance to put skates on knows that once they're a part of a youth team, that if this thing pans out with their buddies, they get to collectively play for the next X amount of years and one day have a chance with their buddies to represent their hometown and go play in a state tournament. And for boys and girls that grew up playing hockey in Minnesota, that is the ultimate, and that is the dream. And I think it's really cool that because these kids play in Minnesota, they get to play or have the opportunity down the road to play in the greatest high school tournament in the country. And I think it's iconic. It's still, for me, one of the greatest weekends of a young person's life, if they're lucky enough to get there. And when you're a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old boy or girl in Minnesota, as soon as you start playing, that's absolutely on the back of your mind and something that you can shoot for, and it's attainable and it's right there. And if they're lucky enough to be in the O'Donnell household and playing Edina, you're that much closer.
What's the biggest moment of your playing career?
No question. 100%. March 1985 on the land that is now the Xcel Energy Center, that was the St. Paul Civic Center, having a chance to play in that state tournament. That will always be, aside from my daughters being born, the greatest weekend of my life. And some would say I peaked at 18, and that's fair. That's an open criticism I'm willing to take. But for me, aside from the three girls that I have, and those weekends will always be my top three when they were born. But aside from that, that is the best 3 days of my life.
What was your strongest attribute, your biggest strength as a goaltender?
Well, back then I was a lot smaller, and back then the game was a lot different. So I played an athletic style. If you look at Marc-Andre Fleury now, who's really a throwback, I played a butterfly version of how he plays now, and not nearly as well as he plays clearly. So I was fairly athletic, and I guess my biggest attribute was my passion for the game. Like, I loved every day at the rink. I didn't care if it was shinny hockey outdoors with my buddies, practice with my team, or obviously game nights. I just loved being at the rink. And I think because of that, I was, as far as skill goes, I was very, very middle of the road. I think what carried me through and got me to the opportunities I had as a hockey player, playing for Burnsville, going to a state tournament, playing in the USHL, and then eventually playing college hockey at St. Thomas, I think that the passion I had, the love I had for hockey, kind of carried me through.
Your memories of Des Moines playing for the Buccaneers in the USHL, what stands out the most?
Leaving home for the first time, and not knowing, you know, what I was like, trying to navigate that whole process from the 2 weeks we had in training camp at these Army barracks in Des Moines to getting to know Jim Wiley, our head coach, who ended up being the coach of the Sharks later in life, but was a pretty hard-nosed guy. And, you know, navigating through a season where I played for a hockey team that won 8 of 75 games and gave up on average close to 52 shots a night. It was a great year of development for me, Joe, as a person and as a hockey player, because when I played in high school, I played for one of the best teams in the state, so I didn't see a lot of rubber every night. When I got to Des Moines, I was on the bottom team in the league, and I was getting pelted every single night, but it forced me to improve my skills. And then obviously just growing up for the first time away from home, it was a tremendous year for me. And I really enjoyed Des Moines. Like, when I got drafted by the Buccaneers and heard I was going to Des Moines, in my mind, as a naive 17 or 18-year-old, I just thought I'd be in the middle of farm country. And when I got down to Des Moines, it was just a little bit smaller version of the Twin Cities. And I loved it. I loved the people, and I loved the area. It was a really cool place to live.
You're a very proud Tommy, St. Thomas alum. How would you sum up the experience there and what it's like to be part of that alumni base?
Well, I was very fortunate. You know, I got recruited by St. Thomas after that year of junior hockey, and I think hockey kind of opened that door for me. And I figured out the academic side of things for the first time in my life. I had kind of focused on hockey more than academics as a young man, and that kind of was a turning point for me there, because I started to look at the future and realize that I wasn't going to be playing hockey and making money. I needed to do something else. And so had a great experience there at the school, met some wonderful people, and the hockey was cool. Like, D3 hockey was great. We had a good team. We had good coaches. Terry Skrypek, for most of my college career, was my coach, a legendary coach in Minnesota. That was cool. But to me, the biggest thing was the academic attention I got. Small classrooms helped push me through a little bit. And then I started to kind of hone in on what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a coach, and I wanted to have the opportunity to be a broadcaster. And St. Thomas gave me that opportunity.
All right, before I cut you loose, we got to get into the Canterbury Racetrack and your role there as a handicapper. Would they call that a host? Like, what your job on camera there, announcing all the your predictions for the races? Like, what is your official title there? You'll have to excuse my ignorance.
No, you're not a horse racing guy by nature. You'll come out and have a good time. But no, I'm a track analyst.
Track analyst, okay.
And I'm the backup track announcer for the 7 or 8 days when Paul Allen is pulled away to his duties with the Vikings. And been out there for 23 years. My two loves in terms of sports are hockey and horse racing. Fantasy football would not be far behind, but those are my two.
And golf. And
I do like fantasy golf. But yeah, it's just horse racing is a puzzle, right? Every race you look at, you're trying to solve the puzzle, and I get paid to analyze that puzzle, to be on TV, to bring some personality, to interview the people that make the game go, the owners of the horses, the people that train the horses, and the jockeys, the athletes that ride these horses. And I absolutely love the vibe that Canterbury provides, because in the wintertime, I'm all buttoned up. I'm in a suit. I'm indoors. I'm traveling all year, hotels, packing up, going here, going there. That's got its own vibe to it. Summertime, there's no travel. I'm in a Tommy Bahama, short sleeve button down and some khakis. I'm outdoors. I'm in the elements. It's beautiful outside. It's a festive place. People love coming there, having a good time. There's concerts. There's fireworks. There's all these activities that go along with it. So two distinctly different seasons, and horse racing provides me with a completely different vibe in the summer that I just love.
What's a typical day like at the track?
Well, you get there a couple hours before first race. You tape a couple of things in the studio. You sit and talk sports with, you know, guys like Paul Allen, our track announcer, who's got that great personality. And then the day just basically unfolds race by race, where you're running from the press box down to the paddock where the horses are saddled, and you're trying to figure out who's going to win these races. You're wrong a hell of a lot more than you're right. But you once in a while find a decent long shot where the fans will get behind you a little bit. And then you get to go kind of behind the curtain like we do during the hockey season. And you get to go in the winner's circle and celebrate these big stakes victories with the owners who maybe bred the horse on their farm out in places like Stillwater, and watch this horse grow up into this champion racehorse, and the trophies and the pageantry. And then the trainer, who's kind of like the coach, tells the story of how this horse has evolved as an equine athlete. And then the jockey, the man or woman that gets to ride the horse, and the relationship that they have, being at the barn every morning, helping train the horse. It's fascinating to me, the work that goes into it. These horses become part of these people's families. And then, you know, having my three girls along for the ride over these many, many years at Canterbury, as they were youngsters, get to go out and spend time where the horses live in the barn area and feed the horses and get to hop on a horse here and there and get to know all the people that take care of them. It's been a great journey. And without Canterbury, there is no Bally Sports North and 18 years on the wild beat. That job where I started in 2000 really helped me figure out what I wanted to do and hone my skills in terms of interviewing and being more comfortable on camera. That job was pivotal for me to have this opportunity that I got back in 06 with the Wild. So I'm very grateful. And again, very lucky to have, you know, these two seasons that mesh so well together, Joe, and have passion for both and love them both so much.
Oh, I just want the listeners to know that we could do an entire podcast with Kevin Gorick on the following topics: fantasy football, sports gambling, movies.
Oh, yes.
I think that's probably, in fact, that's probably the three that we won't talk about here because we're running out of time. I don't want to make this episode too long. I don't want to keep you too long, but just know that Kevin is an eccentric person. He's a great personality. He is as fun to be around as you could imagine because of his passion and his energy that comes out on a daily basis, sports or otherwise. But he has his quirks and he has his loves, his passions, and those things. He doesn't deviate from those things. Okay. So I need that to be out there, and just know we could spend another hour talking about things completely unrelated to the Minnesota Wild and Canterbury Racetrack. But I digress. All right. This is what I call quick hits there, Gorg.
Okay.
It's five questions. I want the first thing that comes to mind. All right.
Okay.
All right. Your top five visiting media meals.
Number one with a bullet is in Detroit. The Red Wings put on an unbelievable feast. That's number one. Number two would be Tampa Bay. Number three would be Chicago. Number four would be Los Angeles. And number five would be Carolina and the barbecue.
See, for those that don't know, the media members get a meal pregame. And every city is very different. Some arenas will give you a voucher and you go out to the concession stands, which we're not big fans of. We're not going to name names. And then some buildings like Detroit will have a spread that you could probably eat there for days and never try the same thing twice. So, and Kevin always has a ranking. I haven't been traveling with the team that long, but over a couple of seasons, it was very clear to me early on that Kevin Burke has a ranking system. It will change year to year. And he takes a lot of pride in it. So
I absolutely do.
All right. Your favorite road city movie theater? Because again, you love movies. You often catch a flick or more on the road or a Broadway show on the road. Your favorite road city movie theater?
I'm going to be there tonight and I am going to be the only person, you know, the traveling party that we have with the Wild is 50, 60 deep. I'm going to be the only person tonight in this beautiful city of Vancouver that will be hunkered down in the Scotiabank Theater on Burrard. If you get to Vancouver and you've got time for a movie, this is as plush a movie theater as I've been to. The popcorn is out of this world good with the real butter. And tonight, since we're doing this podcast, and I will be up there on an off night going to a movie, they are showing the 40-year anniversary of James Cameron's The Abyss. Yes, he did Titanic and the Avatars, and he's great, and he's hip now and with it and wow. But in 1983, he was just coming of age. This was his first big movie, The Abyss, and they're going to play it back tonight for me at 6 o'clock, and I can't wait.
Just for you?
Well, I don't know. I better get tickets because I do think it's the only showing tonight. And so if it's sold out, I would be heartbroken. So I'll be walking up there over the lunch hour to secure my ticket. But I will be the only person in the Wild traveling party at that theater. This much I can promise you.
The movie you've watched the most all time?
I would have to say Fletch with Chevy Chase, because as a young man, I watched that movie no less than 100 times. And now when I bump into it on cable, I cannot turn away. It's just one of those movies. I'll never forget it, Joe, because back when the Burnsville Center in God's Country had a movie theater, my good friend Marco Siki, who now is a scout with the Penguins, just finished up coaching in Wisconsin with the Badgers. He lived down the block. His dad was the high school coach, and we were movie guys. And we went to the opening day performance of Fletch at noon on a Friday, the very first screening of this movie. We liked it so much, we stayed for the 2:30 screening, and we went home and showered and had a double date with our girlfriends that night and saw it for a third time. So it has to be Fletch.
Wow. You might have hinted at this earlier, but this is going to be another one I'm putting you on the spot here. Better Minnesota hockey event, Hockey Day Minnesota or the high school tournament?
Ouch. This is a tough one.
Bally Sports will not be offended if you don't choose Hockey Day, which they broadcast.
And I love Hockey Day. So I'm gonna clarify by saying this. The best day of my work calendar every single year now, and for the last almost two decades, is Hockey Day Minnesota. But the best day for any high school hockey player in Minnesota has to be the day they step on the ice at that state tournament. There is nothing quite like it. That's what makes section playoff hockey, and specifically section final night, so incredible. Because in that section final, you got two teams on the ice. One is going to be heartbroken for the rest of their life. The other is going to secure their childhood dream with their buddies and go to the state tournament. So I'd be a fraud if I didn't say the state tournament.
What is the most thrilling play in sports?
The most thrilling play in sports to me is an overtime breakaway in hockey during the playoffs. A lot on the line there. Think about it. You know,
it's
mano a mano. And it's overtime. The whole building rises as one. It builds to this crescendo, either the big save or the big goal, the game-winning goal. I'd have to go with that.
So a little Theo Fleury, Calgary Flames, sliding on his knees at center ice after the overtime winner.
That was pretty cool. Or, you know, we'll call it a quasi-breakaway, but Andrew Brunette, 2003, Pepsi Center. Bye-bye, Patrick Waugh.
I appreciate your time, my friend. It was great learning a little bit more about you, even though I think we know each other pretty well. I stand by what I said a minute or two ago. Great personality, great friend, great person. It is a pleasure to travel with you and spend time with you. I cannot overstate his love for fantasy football, fantasy golf, movies, and his 1987 flip phone. He is Kevin Gorg, Bally Sports North ringside reporter, Canterbury Park track analyst, and all-around great dude and big-time sports fan. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, Joe. This was a lot of fun.
Gorgomatic21 on Twitter. Anywhere else they can follow you or anything else you need to promote?
No, I would think I'm just starting to tip my toes into the water on Instagram. Took a picture of someone out this morning. Yeah,
hang
my
on,
daughters.
Breaking news, Sounder.
My daughters have tried to help. You know, they're in their 20s and then, you know, they're hip and now and with it. And I'm trying to learn. And So, yeah, I got the Instagram account. I'm just under my name. There'll be a lot of stuff from the wild road trips. Now, I haven't done what you did. You should promote yourself because you put out some really cool video with a like a photo dump from our trip to Sweden. That's way too much for me. I'm still learning how to send a picture out. So maybe you can teach me down the road.
Well, I was going to say legit. I pretty much just learned to do that on the fly last night myself, standing at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. So I could teach you very easily. And hopefully you don't screw it up. What is the Instagram handle?
Just Kevin Gorg. Yeah, just
you didn't
my
go Gorgomatic21?
Not on Insta. No, I just kept it basic.
That's a missed opportunity.
I would agree.
Stick
I didn't want to
brand.
Confuse people, though.
Stick with
I
the
know.
Brand.
21
All right,
should be there.
Kevin Gorg on Instagram, Gorgomatic21 on Twitter. Now it's called X, I guess. Wild Joe Radio for me on both platforms. Kevin, thanks for doing this, my friend, and enjoy the movie tonight.
Thank you, Joe.
One-on-one with Joe O'Donnell, another episode in the books. My thanks to Kevin Gorg, as always, presented by SodaStick, SodaStick.com, designed by Minnesotans for Minnesotans. Let's hope the Minnesota Wild keep it rolling under new head coach John Hines, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and to follow One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell.